session number 147963.
Norman, reel three.
At the top of the climb, the door opened and the co-pilot came out and saw that four of us were wearing wings and said, the autopilot's broken down, each of you in turn, 1 hour on the wheel. And so we took it in turns and we manually flew the aeroplane to the first stop, which was Malta. Where the proper crew course took over and landed it. And we proceeded in that way. I've forgotten where the autopilot was repaired, but anyway, we were only too glad to go up there and fly in the front for a bit from time to time, because it was a very long journey. It took 10 days to get to Singapore. Including, in fact, a weekend at Colombo, where we stopped because it was some extraordinary festival there, and we couldn't possibly carry on. I think it was a bank holiday weekend. So you can sense the urgency of the whole thing was carried out. But we staged through Malta, Habania in Iraq, Karachi, and one or two other places, Penang, and down to Singapore. A very interesting, if incredibly boring, trip. Interesting in some respects. And then from there on, we left RAF Transport Command and went in the Flash Harry opulence of a BOAC Argonaut, the DC-10 with Griffin engines. And that took us in two legs, just over a day, up through Okinawa, and where we refueled in Okinawa to Tokyo. And in Tokyo, I think we spent a night there and then travelled again the following day and overnight by train, quite an experience, a Japanese train, through, I think it was Nagasaki. That was an interesting sight. To Sasebo, where we joined the ship and arrived in the wardroom in our tropical gear with sort of white knees, surrounded by all these chaps, tanned and war-weary veterans, having been on station for a couple of weeks, to be asked the question, hello chaps, what are you here for? We've got plenty of air crew in the squadrons anyway. And so our reply was just, you know, don't ask us, mate, we've just been sent out. Anyway, we soon got absorbed into the squadron, and as soon as the ship sailed, did some brief deck landing, refreshing flying, and then joined the squadron in the operational flying that they did for the next 2 weeks. But after that, most of this was done up the east, the west coast. Although at the start, I recall we did one. The ship went up the east coast, and we did a raid on a place called Wan San, and a lot of railway lines there. That was the whole air group. With the Seafires giving us fighter cover, and we did strafing and bombing of the railway line. And then the other missions that I remember were firstly going to do artillery spotting for the army ashore, who were bombarding various places. Nothing very much seemed to happen there. It was rather dull and boring. Occasionally we would do on our own in the Firefly squadron, just flying on our own without any cover or company, just patrolling around the islands lying slightly offshore to see if we could see and beat up any sampans or anything like that, which allegedly were carrying supplies up to the enemy. And finally, in fact, the other phase of the operations that we were involved in was supporting the landings at Incheon, and it was immediately after that that our relief carrier, which I think was Theseus, arrived on the scene, and we departed for Hong Kong. Only sort of details that I can remember of those events and sorties were very brief. I remember once, in fact, in doing a patrol around the islands, coming across a sampan that shouldn't have been there, merely because our brief was shoot at anything that's moving on the water. It should not be there. They've been warned not to have any traffic. Of course, they did it all at night anyway. But this chap was foolish enough to go out at daytime. And so I lined up and dived on him to give him a burst of 20mm. As I pressed the gun trigger, it all came apart under my thumb, and I was getting electric shocks through all the contacts, the bare contacts underneath it. And naturally, my aim was pretty wild at this point, and the bullets went anywhere in the world. I can't remember where, but it certainly didn't hit it. And I really thought at that point, well, is there any point in carrying on with this? And so I turned away, continued the patrol until it was time to carry on to land, hoping that that wouldn't happen again. I remember, too, doing a low-level patrol around the islands and just on the edge of the mainland to see what was going on and report it, a visual reconnaissance mission. And coming around a shallow hill and seeing a large large corrugated iron building with leper colony written on it in 10-foot letters. I thought, well, if I have to bail out, don't do it here. I also got a hell of a bollocking, too, for getting back one time for not having contacted the ship, who thought I was I should have contacted them every 20 minutes, and I didn't contact them every 20 minutes, and completely forgot about that. And another time when the intercom broke down. The aeroplanes were in a terrible state, they really were, because they'd been out there in the Far East for so long, and indeed they'd been run down somewhat. And the intercom had packed up halfway through, and I couldn't talk to my air crewman in the back, although I could hear him. And I had made an approach to the ship, in fact, and had been waved off because my hook wasn't down. So I'd gone around again, put the hook down, and the chap in the back kept telling me that the ship had told me that the hook wasn't down. And I wasn't able to tell him, don't worry, I've got it down now. And I carried out the approach to landing, and his voice rose an octave at a time each time he told me that the hook wasn't down, until we actually landed on, and he suddenly realized that in fact we were coming to a perfectly good arrested landing. Those are the silly sort of memories I've got of that particular period that come immediately to mind. A strange sort of military episode.
What kind of support did the air crews operating from the carrier get from the carrier itself?
Well, before I answer that, immediately, of course, one memory has come back of an incident, which I think is very, very typical and taught me a lesson. We had, in our operations there, all the airplanes were covered, had the standard black and white stripes over the wings, with which airplanes had been painted in the Normandy landings, and had proved very effective in identifying who was who and which side was which. And so we used to fly around with these black and white markings on, and thinking that we were pretty safe from being bounced by our own forces. There was always another American aircraft carrier in the area, and we coordinated our efforts loosely enough so that we didn't hit the, or arrive at the same target at the same time. However, as luck would have it, I was patrolling along on my own at about, I think, 5,000 or 6,000 feet on my way to the coast, when suddenly, coming the other direction, I saw two AD Sky Raiders, and I knew immediately that they were from the USS Lake Champlain, I think. And I thought, well, I'll just keep my eye on those. And sure enough, as they got just about abreast of me, their wings turned over and they started an attack. And I thought, I'll bet they think I'm something else. They bet they think I'm a MiG or something like that. So I got full power on and the cruising flap down as quick as I could and turned like crazy. And I could actually just turn inside them. And they made one 360-degree turn. We made this 360-degree turn, thinking we'd get onto each other's tail. The thought crossed my mind, do I shoot them down to prevent them shooting me down? When they broke off, mercifully. It would have been very embarrassing for either side if it had gone wrong. However, their story had a slight sequel in that a few days later we were back in Sasebo and there was the American carrier, and an invitation had arrived from them saying, come over and have a chat, a cup of coffee or a bite of lunch, in fact, which we were only too delighted to do because the food in Triumph wasn't all that much at that time. So I went across and I was sitting down at lunch opposite a bunch of Americans, and I related the story. And to my astonishment, one of the guys on the other side of the table said, yes, that was me. That he had seen us and he reckoned that I was flying as a pair. We were MiGs and thought, or he actually said that he thought that we might be MiGs. It didn't look quite right, and he was coming to have a look. And so that was it. And it shows, in fact, and I always remember that, in fact, that don't assume that the guy coming the other direction thinks that you are on his side. Having said that, I've now forgotten the question that you asked earlier.
It's about the support you got from the Triumph.
It was standard. It was good. The ship had worked up as an aircraft carrier with its own air group for over 18 months, 2 years, and so knew its business very well, and the support was excellent. Given that the aeroplanes were nearly getting towards the end of their time and needed major overhauls. In fact, I think I'm right in saying that Triumph at the time was the only ship in the fleet that was operating Firefly 1s as opposed to the later version, which is the Firefly 4. And I think it was the only squadron of C-Fire 47s as well, too. And so no great backing of stores was available for these aeroplanes, and in the knowledge that the ship was just about to return to UK at the end of its commission anyway, the material support for maintenance of the aeroplanes had perhaps been run down a bit. And so it came at an unfortunate time that they had to suddenly turn around and join in a war. Having said that, the engineers did remarkable things to keep the aeroplanes flying, and all in all, it wasn't too bad. It was just annoying from time to time. Things didn't work.
Were you happy flying the Firefly 1?
Yes, in some ways it was a nicer aeroplane than the Firefly 4. Didn't have quite the same performance, although what the differences were, I can't put my finger on. I think the level speed, I think, was a bit lower. I'm not sure about the range performance. But it was essentially the same, but I can't remember too much of the differences between them.
Was there much enemy opposition in the form of enemy aircraft or flak?
My time there, I didn't get shot at, and there were no fighters, and I don't think there was very much flak experienced by any of the air group, but I can't really say that for sure, because I was only there for about 3 weeks, and I only flew about 13-14 missions, but there wasn't a great deal of it. I know I came back to the ship one day, landed on, taxiing forward, using the rudder, of course, and the brakes, and suddenly the rudder jammed over one way. I was able to stop, fortunately. I did my safety straps, looked back, and found that the rudder was actually jammed, and subsequently discovered a hole in the skin of the rudder, and a bit of the metal had peeled back and had jammed itself against the fin which holds the rudder. And somebody said, oh, I see you've been hit by flak. Well, I don't believe there was, because I didn't see any flak, but I had been shooting up something, and I think I may well have flown through my a ricocheted bullet or something like that. So if I was hit at all, I was hit by my own fire. No, there was no great opposition to what we were doing at the time.
What did the Incheon landings look like?
I don't recall very much about that, actually. There were a lot more ships around, and one had to avoid going anywhere near Incheon, because, or certainly anywhere near those ships, because they were very trigger happy. And that's about it, really. We didn't see, it was nothing like a massive invasion. It was just a number of ships carrying troops in a pretty orderly fashion. But I don't recall seeing the actual operation itself. I remember seeing at a distance some of the ships in the harbour there. But it would be very risky to have flown anywhere closer than that, because you'd have been hacked down by your own forces, I think. Nothing spectacular.
You were flying in summer weather, were you, in Korea?
No, this was in the autumn. It was, in fact, just looking at the record, it was August, September. Yes, the month from the middle of August to the middle of September. So the weather was, in fact, just about as good as it could be out there. It was nice and clear. It wasn't cold. It wasn't too hot. Many of the carriers had a very rough time there in the winter months, particularly with being so cold, ice and snow on the flight deck.